Court will turn to the fourth case, Bracey v. Grondin. Ms. Rollier.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Suzanne Rollier, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Larry Bracey. This appeal involves two interlocking yet distinct issues. The denial of Mr. Bracey's request for the assistance of counsel precluded him from conducting meaningful discovery on the issue of spoliation that would have aided the court below in making an informed decision on his motion for a spoliation sanction. What makes this case unique is that the only evidence produced by the defendants during the discovery process relating to their role in the destruction of the videotape of the incident underlying this claim is an admission by the defendants that they could have preserved that video recording. We don't know why they did not preserve the video. We do not know what happened to the video. And we do not know what, if any, steps the individual defendants may have taken to preserve the video.
Right, but you're asking us to evaluate the appointment of counsel decision with the benefit of hindsight, and our cases say that that's not appropriate. We view this ex ante, given the information known to the magistrate judge at the time the decision was made, and this strikes me as a perfectly reasonable decision at the time, and it's we don't alter it based on what we now know about how the discovery process went.
Well, we are asking for that decision to be reviewed because at the time that decision was made, Mr. Bracey had filed a complaint that not only contained a spoliation claim, but also contained allegations that the prison had refused to turn over the videotapes. And so the difficulties that he would face in discovery were apparent to the court at that time. The court had dismissed the spoliation claim because Wisconsin does not recognize independent claim for spoliation. So the court did review the complaint, and that complaint was available to the court at the time it made the decision, and therefore the court should have considered that this complex issue would be might require the assistance of counsel for Mr. Bracey.
Well, I guess I have a little trouble with that characterization of it as complex. It seems reasonably straightforward. He makes the request for the tape, and it's denied. He pursues that. It's scientific. It's not. There's not some necessary analysis of the video or something of that nature. It's they either have it or they don't have it.
Well, the issue here is the capability of the prisoner to collect any discovery related to that destruction at all because of security concerns. And as a prisoner with a legitimate claim for a potentially legitimate claim for spoliation, he was not in a position to, whether or not he could understand.
He understood it well enough to allege it in his complaint, and he got the complaint to the courthouse and so on, and seemed to be reasonably capable as a pro se litigant.
Right, but he was not capable of conducting discovery as a prisoner.
How so? What stopped him?
Because of the well-recognized security concerns that prisons have, and this is in this particular case,
despite all that, prisoners frequently submit requests for admission, interrogatories, take depositions, lots of things.
Right, and after this decision was made, Mr. Bracey did those things and was refused that discovery on the basis of security grounds. He repeatedly made those requests that were denied.
Right, and that answer would have been the same had he been represented by counsel.
Well, but by the time Mr. Bracey obtained counsel on the eve of trial, the defendants actually produced under seal certain documents that, but certainly not all of the relevant documents that related to the spoliation claim, demonstrating a willingness by the prison to, or the defendants to, at least allow an attorney to review these materials, if not an inmate. And, you know, what's important is that the court, in determining the request for assistance of counsel, should have considered the complexity, not just of his ability to review the case, but should have weighed the challenges he would face in obtaining this discovery. And without any of this evidence, the decision to deny his motions for spoliation instruction was premature. You know, the evidence that was before the court, as pointed out by Mr. Bracey in his motion for spoliation instruction. Now, I should point out, Mr. Bracey filed a motion for spoliation sanction that was later adopted by his attorney. So both motions were before the court when it rendered its decision, when it rendered its ruling on the motion for spoliation sanction. And in that, in Mr. Bracey's motion, he did raise the issue that the defendants had admitted in their answers to interrogatories that they could have preserved the video. He also requested an in-camera review of the technological equipment that the prison used to record the event on July 29, 2005. And he, finally, he did request a hearing and examination of the security director to gather more information on the subject. In response to that motion, the defendants produced two affidavits, neither of which got to the question of what role the individual defendants in this case played in preserving or deciding not to preserve the videotape of the incident. The affidavits contained highly selective information that was, you know, only beneficial to the defendants, but did not answer the relevant questions. Mr. Bowden's affidavit does not provide any indication of what the defendants did or did not do in relation to the video. Mr. Bowden himself admits that he was not part of the determination of whether to preserve the video. And, you know, there's no, the report that he reviews to determine what happened, he played no role in creating that report. There's
right,
nothing
the,
mentioned.
The record is that those decisions are made higher up in the chain of command at the prison, and there's nothing to contradict that, so far as we know. And by this time, there is counsel on the job, right? So to the extent that more was necessary, counsel could have asked for discovery to be reopened to explore that, right? And that didn't happen.
Well, the counsel that was, counsel voluntarily, the counsel that appeared was counsel that appeared on behalf, because Mr. Bracey had sent out many requests for counsel all along. And he did not appear until trial. He was essentially trial counsel. And he was given less than a month before trial, given these documents that were did not contain any of the, you know, information as to...
That's defense. Long enough to understand that to the extent that there were gaps and more discovery was necessary, it could have been requested and was not.
Well, the bottom line is that the court did not have the information before it, any evidence before it, on which to base its ruling that the defendants did not play any role in the destruction of the film.
Ms. Rowley, is there any indication that anyone at the prison watched this video?
There is no indication that that happened. There's there's no testimony from the higher-up individual that that may or may not have reviewed the video, and there's no indication of what happened.
But there's no evidence that they deliberately avoided watching it. I mean, there's no suggestion of that, is there?
There's no indication of anything. We don't know what occurred. And that's the question we are asking the court to answer. We're asking for a reopening of discovery so that those questions can be addressed.
Well, that, I guess, goes to Judge Sykes' point of whether some of that could have been explored in that month before trial.
Well, and again, Mr. Bracey did raise that issue in his original brief, that a hearing would be beneficial to address the issue more fully. And I see I'm going to reserve my time for a little.
Thank you. Mr. Brissetti?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Robert Brissett of the State of Wisconsin, representing the defendant appellees, Lieutenant James Grondin, and Officers Thomas Taylor, Eric Hunt, and Jennifer Murray. In this case, Mr. Bracey challenges two discretionary decisions made by the District Court, the decision to deny his motion to appoint counsel and the decision to deny his motion for an adverse jury instruction. Because the record shows the District Court reasonably exercised its discretion, those decisions should be affirmed. At the beginning, I'd like to address some factual points raised by the opposing side. One is the contention that the only evidence provided in discovery was admission that the defendants, related to security footage, admission that the defendants could have preserved that footage. This is not a true statement. In fact, the defendants answered many questions related to the security footage and provided much more information, including the fact that Security Director Gary Boughton was the person responsible for deciding whether to preserve security footage. They also identified that there was no policy on the issue. Furthermore, to the point that there was a pro se motion for spoliation sanctions and the attorney's motion for spoliation sanctions before the court, this is not true. When counsel appeared in this case on behalf of Mr. Bracey, the next day a pro se motion for sanctions was filed. The district court explicitly gave Mr. Bracey's attorney time to evaluate the issue of spoliation. When he decided to go forward with a pretrial motion for sanctions, the court immediately denied the pro se motion for sanctions, and therefore it was not before the court. Now, addressing the motion to appoint counsel, based on the evidence before it, the district court reasonably found that this case was not too complex for Mr. Bracey to litigate. It is important to note that when the district court ruled on the motion, it was early in the case before discovery had begun. The court noted that Mr. Bracey's submissions were clear and contained appropriate information, and that the substantive facts were within his personal knowledge. The court also noted that it would instruct Mr. Bracey on how to gather evidence through discovery at the preliminary pretrial hearing, and that he would receive a detailed order explaining how to use discovery. Furthermore, the court made clear that the denial was without prejudice and that Mr. Bracey could renew it later if there was a need. Now, the claim that the district court needed to consider the issue of spoliation because it was raised in the complaint is not correct. Mr. Bracey's motion, well, first of all, it was never made in the district court, and therefore it was waived. Mr. Bracey's motion for counsel never identified difficulties obtaining evidence, spoliation or otherwise, as a reason why counsel was needed. Furthermore, Mr. Bracey never renewed his motion during the discovery period, even though he was told he could. And when counsel appeared on his behalf, counsel never asked that discovery be reopened. Now, regarding the complaint issue, the complaint only makes a conclusory statement that an unknown person taped over the footage. This is not enough to raise a complex spoliation issue that the court is required to consider. Furthermore, the claim that spoliation is too complex is not true, especially at this early stage of the case. Early in the case, the issue of spoliation requires answers to easy questions, such as, was there footage? Who was responsible for deciding whether to preserve footage? And was there a policy to preserve footage? Mr. Bracey was capable of asking those questions, and the record shows in discovery he did ask those questions and received answers. To the extent those answers showed a complex issue, Mr. Bracey knew he was free to renew his motion for counsel because the court explicitly told him that. More importantly, even if the court found an abuse of discretion, the decision to deny counsel should still be affirmed because there's no showing of prejudice. This is a case where Mr. Bracey had counsel when the issue of spoliation was litigated, and that counsel had an opportunity to ask that discovery be reopened if there was a need. Mr. Bracey's counsel never asked to reopen discovery, and in fact, in his motion, explicitly told the court there was ample evidence before it on the issue of spoliation. Furthermore, this court has repeatedly noted that speculation about whether counsel would have done a better job prosecuting the case is not an accurate measure of prejudice. Instead, prejudice is usually established through a pro se litigant's poor performance. Mr. Bracey's pro se performance was above average. He actively engaged in the discovery, including the discovery related to the video evidence. He further successfully defeated summary judgment with a thorough response, including gathering evidence from other inmates. He also filed a competent pro se motion for spoliation sanctions, showing the issue is not too complex for him. Regarding the spoliation sanctions motion, the district court recently found that denied the motion for an adverse jury instruction. The spoliation sanction of an adverse jury instruction can only be given when a party intentionally destroys evidence in bad faith. Now, Bracey's argument that there is insufficient evidence before the court to rule on his motion has been waived and fails to recognize that he had the burden of proof. When counsel appeared in this case, the district court explicitly gave time to evaluate the issue of spoliation before deciding how to proceed with the already filed motion for sanction. Mr. Bracey's counsel decided to pursue a pretrial motion and explicitly told the court there was ample evidence. Bracey never objected to the state of discovery and never asked to conduct additional discovery. Since he had the burden of proof, it was his obligation to do so. Because he never objected and said there was ample evidence, it was reasonable for the court to rule on the merits of the motion. Regarding those merits, the district court correctly noted that there was no evidence before it that the defendants had anything to do with deciding whether to preserve footage. Instead, the evidence showed that it was the responsibility of the security director or the security director designee alone, were the sole parties responsible for deciding whether to preserve. As this court pointed out in Burks versus Ramesh, prisons divide tasks, and no prisoner is allowed to insist that one employee do another employee's job. Furthermore, as the Sixth Circuit recently recognized in Atkins versus Wollever 3, requiring correctional officers to affirmatively intervene to make sure that prison preserves policies creates an undue burden on institutions. Such a finding would require prison employees to constantly second-guess the prison's ability to retain evidence, which in turn would interfere with administrators' judgment in crafting policy and running the institution. Furthermore, given inmates' well-known penchant for litigation, if every employee who was a potential defendant in a lawsuit had an obligation to make sure evidence was preserved, prison employees would be required to spend a large portion of their time making sure evidence was maintained, and as a result would have less time to focus on their main responsibility of preserving security and order within the institution. Your Honors, because the record shows the district court reasonably exercised its discretion in denying the motion to appoint counsel and the motion for an adverse jury instruction, those decisions and the judgment of the district court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Rollier?
I just have a few quick points of rebuttal. First of all, I just want to clarify that Mr. Bracey's motion for spoliation sanctions was adopted by his counsel. The court did deny his motion as moot because he did have counsel, but when his counsel then later, he produced his own motion, but it was only supplemental to Mr. Bracey's motion. So both motions were before the court. Mr. Boughton, counsel suggested that Mr. Boughton was the person who made the decision not to preserve the videotape, and Mr. Boughton acknowledges he was not there on the date at which that decision was made, if it was made on that decision. And finally, the problem here is that Mr. Bracey was denied access to on Mr. Bracey's burden. On the one hand, he's denied access to the evidence that he needs to prove his burden by the people that possess that knowledge.
He didn't charge bad faith, though, here. You don't argue that, do you?
I don't argue. I'm sorry.
There's no charge of bad faith by the prison.
There's no means to decide whether or not there's bad faith. And Mr. Bracey did ask in his interrogatories what the defendants, the individual defendants, did or did not do to preserve this video. And that the defendants, therefore, had a continuing obligation to supplement their interrogatory responses. And after Mr. Bracey obtained counsel, they could have, if they felt more comfortable divulging that information to an attorney, they had that obligation. So there is some burden on the defendants as well as Mr. Bracey.
So you're questioning the quality of those responses?
Well, there's very little response, and that is why Mr. Bracey filed a motion to compel originally, and that is why he asked later for in-camera review of some of this information.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. All right, thanks to all counsel. And the case